I'm standing in North Ross Common at a height that's looking out where I can actually see Leitrim and possibly Cavan, possibly Longford, definitely, as I say, I'm in Ross Common, maybe even Fermanagh, and probably Sligo. And I'm at the Arigna Mines Experience. And I'm about to go on a tour, and my tour guide will be Michael Early. Michael, welcome to the Gaelic Hour.
Thanks very much.
You're about to lead us on a tour through the Arigna Mine Experience. There's a little bit of background, I know we'll get it in there, but I understand the Arigna Mines was operational for close on 400 years between iron and coal.
That's correct. I'd be one of the last of the guides here, the youngest guide here. I did 10 years working in the mine. The father did all his life working in the mines. Uncles from all, both sides worked in the mine. And we have no kind of script or anything. We tell it as it is.
Right.
I have 10 years experience. I explain my 10 years. Morris Cullen, Morris is inside in the mine itself. He has a vast experience. He has nearly 20 years. One of our oldest guides there is 72 years of age, Peter McNiff. And he has unbelievable.
Right.
So my 10 years, I tell it as it is, and all tours are different. So
as we go through the experience, what we're going to see, we're going to go down into the mine, and you'll be explaining to us what the process was and some of the history of the mine, etc.
Yes, indeed. As best I can do, you know. Like,
yeah.
I've just, as I say, 10 years experience,
right.
But I have a little bit more because since I was little, I've seen growing up with the mines and the father coming home at the evening time. I've seen that, and my uncles did them all talking about the mines. So, in fairness, now I would say now I had a fair and fairly vast experience of it, you know.
Now, since the Arigna Mine Experience opened, it's open 7 days a week, and you get tours coming through here the whole time.
Yes.
So, how long have you been doing?
I'm just under a year now at it.
Right.
And actually, from the start now, I was kind of a little bit nervous, but once you have worked in the mine, it
right.
just comes to you, like, even from the very, very start, all comes back. Like, once you have ever set foot in the mine,
yeah.
I think you never will forget.
And the kind of people, the people that come through, the visitors that come through, must be very rewarding at the end of a tour.
It is, indeed. There's no doubt. I've even seen it there. I just reflected on it one Friday evening. We had about 100 odd kids in the tunnel at one time, and I had a tour of about 4 people or 6 people, give or take, in the evening time, and I had time to take. And I did actually say, just reflected on it and said, God, the old people, they must be proud to see such, these guys, little ones, enjoy and see and what. Because there was a time, maybe, in the mining times that the miners looked down on a little bit.
Right, right.
And it's lovely now to see the tide turning and see these little people so interested in it. And that makes our job easier and we put more into it, I think, maybe.
Now, of course, given that I just described where we are, we're very much at the north of County Roscommon. And it's a little bit off the beaten track. So if somebody wants to come here, they actually have to come looking for you in a way. But there's a website out there where people can find you guys, and that, I think, is www.arignaminingexperience.ie. And as the tour goes on, we'll be hearing, as you describe, the various experiences.
I will indeed, and I hope I do my best now, because all our tours seems to be, everybody's quite happy. And along with that, you said about the website and all of that, one of our best promotion is word of mouth.
Right.
People come here to bring people back. To seem to enjoy it. I think we seem to be getting it right.
Yeah. One of the reasons I'm here today was because my brother, Dave Down in Carrick, said we had to come up and we had to go through, that it was a fantastic.
Well, I hope you're not disappointed. I'll do the best now I can with my limited experience, but 10 years now is all I've had here.
Well, Michael, we leave it at that and we get into the tour. We'll catch snippets and I know the listeners will get a good flavour of what the mining experience is.
I
encourage them to come and visit.
Well, I hope I don't disappoint you.
School day is over. Come on then, John. Time to be getting your pit boots on. On with your sark and the moleskin trousers. It's time you were on your way. Time you were learning the pitman's job and learning the pitman's today. Time you were learning the colors. sparrows flight. Time you were off to the anthracite. The morning mist is on the valley. It's time you were on your way. Time you were learning the miner's job and learning the miner's pay. Come on then, John, time to be getting your pit boots on with your sark and the moleskin trousers. It's time you were on your way. Time you were learning the pitman's job and learning the pitman's pay.
Right, that helps us, because some of the wording we use might be familiar. Now, in the mine itself, there's two sets of railway tracks. There's one bringing full hunches of coal out of the mine, the other bringing empty hunches in. It's a continuous wire rope runs into the mine for a turn wheel to an engine out here to the hill. This is what we call the hill. From there on in is the mine itself. There'll be about 16 or 18 inches between the two sets of railway tracks. We can't have it here because people would be falling over. We show it further on in. Over her head there you see a statue. Well, that statue, that lady, she has been around a lot of the mines over, was various mines over the years. So this is the first time she has a permanent roof over her head, and long may it last. This man here has been 57 years working down on the ground in the mine. You guys will be about 40, 45 minutes and you might be delighted to get out. In the morning time we came into the mine, we always stopped here. We said a little prayer, just for that no harm would come to us during the day. A very, very dangerous environment we were working in. In the evening time we stopped again. We took our helmets off and we said a little prayer, thanking God that we got out safely. In originally here there was no such thing as health and safety, there was no such thing as insurance. So maybe we thought this was ours. I like to think so anyway. Now that little sacred heart lamp, there was three shifts of men here. One man kept that alight all of the time. Now there's only a few of us, we're only just during the days, so we can't have that done. Now overhead you see steel arches here. Now those steel arches wouldn't be in a working mine at all. You'd have a timber on the left hand side, one on the right, and a crown across it. So that's a new addition for safety and for in here. Now folks, what I tell all groups is just keep to the centre of the road. The reason being is you could get a bucket of water down on your head here very handy. You get a cold shower here handy. I told a group of kids that one day last, and he was last Friday, and it actually came down to my own head, so it's a great help. Before coal was mined in Oregon here, there was iron ore. Now, the Heavenly Bridge, if you're familiar with it in Dublin, was invented with our iron ore. Now, I don't dwell all that much on the iron ore end of it. I kind of stick to the coal mine inside of it. The age to start in the mine was between 12 and 14 years of age. I started when I was just under 14. I worked for 10 years until it closed in 1990. My father worked all his life here in the mines. Now, when I say 12 or 14, the reason being, after 14 years of age, you're getting a little bit big and you're getting a little bit lanky, maybe, or a bit awkward. So, the best you start as early as possible. Now, the area around here, between Dunkirk and Rigna, all the places, it was a close-knit community. So, you know, if you were 16 or 17 when you started working in the mine, you'd be classed as a bit of a pet, maybe, or a manly boy. So, the best you start as early as you could. I like that when I say it to people, especially school tours. There was no CVs, there was no nothing like that at all. You went to either Leighton, Splin and Lebanon, whatever group there was. And if you were a hardy enough looking young fella, you got your job.
And Michael, when you say whatever group there were different contractors?
There was indeed. There was the major contractor here was Leighton's, then Splin and Lebanon. And there was Noons. There was a lot of different people at it. Now, and actually, as he travelled up now, he's seen a brick factory down there. That's owned now by the Leightons, which is a very, very good thing that the generations, it's keeping going. This is a cross-section of the mine. These are all seams of coal. This is the one we talk about. The first mining of that was for hospitals, for workhouses, barracks, and domestic use. In 1958, we got a power station to burn our coal. That power station worked away up in 1992, but in 1990, it stopped taking our coal. So by and large, when that finished, that was the end of the mines. They gave us a few pound redundancy and just got rid of it altogether. Now around that, as you see here, this craw coal. Now there's two seams of coal, craw coal. That's a very low-grade coal with a very high ash content. No good at all for domestic use. But the ESB told us that they would build a power station that generated electricity to burn that coal. Now they sent people here and they did surveys and all of that, and they told us there's enough of that coal under us here to fuel that power station for 40 years. We didn't get that power station in the 90s, so I don't think we ever will get it. So there's millions and millions of tons of that under us here, and I'd say it always will be here. The mine itself is a series of roads. This is the straight road. This is the blue area we walked in. There'll be a haulage system and electric light on that. Off it, you have a double slope to your left, one to your right. You went in 12 yards, you have another little road called a branch. 12 more yards, you have another little road called a branch. Now, a coal cutting machine, which I'll show you later on, would cut 1 yard into the coal from boundary to boundary. In each of these branches, there was two fellas. There was a shoveler and a drawer. The drawer was the young fella. The shoveler was the older man. So this shoveler would shovel the coal out onto the road. The drawer with a shovel would fill it into the hutch. You guys seen the hutches, yeah? Push it on railway track along here, onto the double slope, on here. And there was a clips man there to hook it onto the wire rope, and away it was gone. This man here would shovel 6 yards to his left, lying on his side, 6 yards to his right. The guy in the next branch would go 6 yards. They'd meet in the middle. Their day's work was done. Next set of fellas, the brushers, came in to advance the tunnels. They blew down the rock with explosives. Now, where the coal was taken out of, they put back in the rock. Because outside there, they didn't want rock. It was costing money. They had no market for it. They did not want to hear tell of rock at all. Now, the coal is very, very compact. It's millions of years in the mountain. So there's no way these fellas, no matter how good they were, could get it in as compact. So they put, the mountain was always dropping. Experts again told us that it's dropping by 50%. So if our seam of coal is 20 inches,
about dropping?
Coming down.
Yeah. Sinking.
From the base or from the top? From the top down. Because like you have 200 feet over
yeah.
of rock above you. And as you take the coal out, the rock within semi-compact. It wouldn't be completely compact. So the mountain always dropped. It was dropping, as I said, about 50%. So if the seam is 20 inches, it's dropping 10 inches. Now at night, when these machines would stop, the noise and the roars and the groans of the timber would threaten you. I would probably be, to be honest about it, I'd be afraid of my life now. But them times, we were young, there was no fear in us at all. Now, like this mountain, this is very, very settled. Like, we have steel and we have all that. This mountain is settled, but at those times. Now, when those branches came for about 120 yards, this area here was treacherous. So what we did was, we moved on, we put a double slope to the left, one to the right, and moved on into the mountain. Now, this sketch there, that's one of the first guys there. He's using a little hand pick, chipping away at the coal. The next advance was an air pick, worked by compressed air. The third was this coal cutting machine. That guy there would be using candles, three per shift. The next advance was a carbide lamp. The carbide, water would go from the top of the carbide lamp down into the, through the carbide, create a gas, you lit the gas and come a shoot of flame out of it. I remember when we were small, if there was a power cut or anything, the father would put it on the mantelpiece and it would fill a room full of light. I never used a carbide lamp, a battery lamp, that's all I've ever used. Here in Lorraine, there was two types of mines. There was a wet mine and a dry mine. A wet mine, you were drowned to the skin. And in a dry mine, you're poisoned with dust. So you can take your pick, folks. This area here would be half as high or as wide to be railway track as for walkers. In the mine itself, we've got a lot of dust, obviously, from the coal. We use a tremendous amount of explosives. So that's our air tunnel there, our air shaft. There's a lot of people in there. We drill the rock, blow it down, put it into hutches, send it outside. In this occasion, we had nowhere else to put it, so we could send it out. We drill it up again, blow down the rock, into hutches, outwind. Until we came to the top of the mountain, which is about 185 feet up there, we have a fan up there, and that's pulling the air around the mine. For an experience, we might need it for an hour and a half. In a working mine, you'd have to have it going all the time. I do tell our visitors, are you good climbers? That's our emergency exit, but I'm only kidding.
Michael, back there you said that there was candles and there was carbide.
Yeah.
Oftentimes the concern in mine is explosives.
Well, you know, because our coal was very little gas in it. So we had no problem with that. In England and in different parts of the world, the seams of coal was very, very high. There was a lot of gas in it. We never had a problem with that at all. The only gas we had, I'll explain later on, is we came on to old workings that was mined hundreds of years ago. There was stagnant air in them. It was called black down. That was more of a danger for us than gas. Because like if you see in the video or whatever out there, you see the guy smoking. And all of that carry on. So we were lucky in a way that gas did a bit. The way the fellows were paid, they were paid per ton of coal that shoveled out, the drawers and shovelers. The brushers were paid per year in advance of the tunnels. The fellows on the coal cutting machine was paid on a bonus system. One thing, when the men got really old and they were not fit to lie on their side shoveling out coal, they weren't sent home. They were given little jobs around the mine, replacing timber, but changing rails. Which was a great thing, because if they were sent home, they get no money. But it was an odd, like in every job, it was an odd young fellow with an ANC bone in him, and he got a handy job. But handy jobs in here are very, very scarce. Now, we're coming out into steel, folks, here, and we're coming on to timber. Don't fret, though. We put it up ourselves. We're all ex-miners. Right? People do actually laugh when they hear that, all right. The only thing about that timber there would just be, can you see it, about that height. Reason being, the guys are paid per year advancing these tunnels. They could go as wide as they want. They could go to the sky with these tunnels. But they'd be putting more work on themselves and they got no extra money. So that timber would be just there. That crown would be just where my hand is. Now, as I said earlier on, the mountain was always coming down. So there was always pressure on that timber. So that timber used to bow in the centre. Now, when you're a young fella and you're coming out, you come out behind the hutch, you're stooped behind the hutch. You forget yourself. You lift up your back. You take a good lump of your shirt and your skin. Just around the time it'd heal, you'd forget yourself again. You'd do the same thing again. You didn't do it a third time. You learn quickly in here. Now, what we have out there on the exhibition area and what we have in here in the mine, we have nothing make me up to make this place look better or worse. It's real. That guy there, he's on the front of our brochure, Eugene McCartan. I was a new young fellow. I was sent into Eugene. I was afraid of me living life because he was a giant of a man. I had no reason being afraid because he was an out and out gentle giant. And Eugene is alive and well and living down in the valley, and I always speak highly of Eugene. What Eugene is wearing there is kind of similar to us. We wore an army shirt, a pair of trousers, a pair of weddings or a pair of boots. The reason we wore an army shirt was it wore well, it was better than the other shirts. But no matter what it was made of, it used to tear. So you got somebody at home to sew a bit of a blanket or a bit of anything at all, just to, on the shoulders. Now, not like these men here. Fashion wasn't a big thing now in the mines. Now that's the gob. That area there. Now, you would walk 6 yards shoveling coal. There's another branch like this here, up there 12 more yards. The guy coming down, you meet in the middle. Your day's work is done. Those timbers, pillars or props. As you took out the coal, you put up those just to hold the roof from collapsing in on top of you. Right? You have to bear in mind that there's nearly 200 feet of rock over you. Now, you could put as little or as many of those as you wanted. It was your call. It was your life. Yeah? There was one fella, now I can't say his name because he's mad alive. He was too nervous. He was like a cat altogether. He had timbers everywhere. All of the place. And he made life very difficult for himself. And I can actually say his first name. I used to shine the light down and say, John, it's more like a forestry in there than a coal mine. And I think now, to be honest about it, I think he brought more timber into this mine than coal himself. He had a fine looking wife, so I wouldn't blame him. Now that's the air pick. That's the mixed advance. That's 30 pound weight. The only thing about that, there was a downside to it. Compressed air, the old men, well, you're pushing the trigger all of the time. The old men, the fingers went down like so. Yes. Now, I seen the father before he died. Them two fingers was gone, the next one was on the way. But they weren't in any pain, but it was a downside to that. But to be fair and to be balanced about it, it was neither the company's fault nor the men's fault. It was a learning process. You see a pool of water there. It was nothing in the morning to lie on your shoulder into that. Yeah? If you complained or give out, those are men that say to you, Alan, what's wrong with you? You can only get wet once. That's what they say to you. Now, for about 20-25 mile radius of here, we grew up with the mines. Since I was about that height, I seen the father getting off the pit lorry coming home. So I suppose in a way I probably knew I was destined for the mine. Now, there came fellas from outside that radius, came in here. I can't say what country they're from. They came in here, I think they stayed about 2.5 hours. They were never seen again.
No.
Some people said they walked out the road, other people said they ran, and maybe they were right.
You only say you met 12 yards in the middle. Does that mean it was totally gone?
Totally gone, yeah.
So there's nothing in there then?
Nothing, the whole length of the thing. You're advancing 1 yard each night.
Yeah.
And that hole from boundary to boundary, all of the coal is gone. Now this is to advance the tunnel. You blew this down with explosives. The gob, the area I showed you there, you put as much of this as you can put in. Now, that's higher and wider than it would be, but like there might be a hutch or two extra that you couldn't get into the mountain. You'd have to send it out. That'd be allowed. But by and large, as I said, they did not want to hear tell of rock outside. Now that big fella there, you'd say, what do we do with him? Well, what we do with him first, obviously we wouldn't get him into the gob. We'd roll up to one side. And even at the time then, when the brushers come in, they'd put what we call a lay on. They put a stick of jelly knight sitting on a piece of dog. They'd light the drum, they'd blow him up with a shot. So that made a little boy out of him. Okay? I'll show you how this mess is created further down.
We get up in the black, down the cold town road, and we hike along the track, where the coal trains go. And we make the ponies pull, till they nearly break their backs, and they'll never see again, down the cold town road. We hear the whistle call, down the cold town road, and we take our towel and doll, where the coal trains go. In the cages then we drop, till there's nowhere else to fall, and we leave the world behind us, down the cold town road. We never see the sun, down the cold town road, at a penny for a ton, where the cold trains go. When the ship comes up on top, we're so thankful to be done, we head home to sleep and dream, down the cold town road. There's my little son, down the cold town road, and they're with their cowboy guns, where the cold trains flow. But they better make the best of their childhood while it runs. There the pick and shovel waiting, down the cold town road. If there's God for us, down the cold town road, all the miners he can bless, where the coal trains load. For we're sweating in the hole, sucking down the devil's dust, just to keep the fire blazing, down the coal town road. We get up in the black, down the coal town road, and we hike along the track, where the coal trains load. And we make the ponies pull, till they nearly break their backs, and they'll never see again, down the coal town road. And we make the ponies pull, till they nearly break their backs, and they'll never see again, down the coal town road.
Michael, the areas between the gobs were not mined, is that correct?
All was mined.
So you go down a gob?
Yeah.
And you meet the guy at the other end?
Yeah.
And then the next gob is how far down?
This road would be 12 yards. Further down, there'd be another road 12 yards. Further down again, there'd be me and another guy would be meeting here. Then, the far side, there'd be two other guys meeting.
Right, but in between, the next gob that you'd do, how far from here would it be?
Well, it was the gobs are running all the way down, from here down. And this core we've seen here,
yeah.
This is cut tonight, this is taken out. Tomorrow night, that'll be cut.
Okay.
So you move on the whole time.
Okay.
You move 1 yard in all of the time.
Okay.
Now, that's the gob up high there. We have that up there. We underbrushed it, just for people to see, rather than bending over. It would be down where our feet is. Those are the pillars. As we walk along here, you see rock pillars. That's what the first guys used.
So how did the green things get in?
Well, that's actually a very good question. What's your name?
Ryan.
That's a very good question, Ryan. Because in the mine, we were, it's new to us. Because we never seen that before.
So
we were working in the mine, the stuff growing there. Yeah. Ryan has told me, and he's very correct. Because in the mine, we never had that. Because it was explosives, the whole lot was dust. But the light actually seems to be creating it. It is a new thing to us altogether, you know. Now, when you started working, the first day in the mine, you got roving about, walking around just to get accustomed to the dark. Maybe the first day, maybe 2 days. After that, you're sent in drawing out coal. The third day, I'm sent in to Ryan here to draw out his coal. If I cannot draw his coal out, he's losing money. I'm no good to him. The next day, I sent into this man the second day, send him to draw out his coal. If I can't draw his coal out, he's losing money. So I'm no good to him. But, to be very fair to the companies, all of the companies, they never sent anybody home. There was an odd young fella that physically wasn't fit to do it. There was an odd young fella had a lazy bone in him. So he wasn't sent home either. They were given easier jobs around the mine. One of them was, like that hutch there, it's on railway track. No problem for anyone to push it there on level ground. But that wasn't always the case. There was some of the branches, there was a terrible push out of. So even the best of us wasn't fit to push it up. So we needed a fella, he was called a putter. He'd sit at the bottom of the hill. As you approach the hill, he helped you up. So that was his job. And like that, he was paid per hour, he'd be on less money. There is 7,500 weight in that. And when I do have little ones, I do ask them and add them. I asked the wee girl there, how long do you think it takes to fill that? She told me 3 days. So I sacked her straight away. 4.5 minutes it would take, give or take. Now, when this reached the haulage system, it was out of our control, so we needed a marker on it. So that's number 74. So when that reaches outside to the hill, the guy outside knows that's Michael's coal. Now, I'll be honest about it. When I came in here and started working in here, when I seen that, I knew it was called a tin. But I says, no, that's a bit fancy. That's posh. We hadn't that. We had tops of coke bottles. We had bits of washers and things like that, so as I say, that's a little bit posh. This is our haulage system here now. Those are full hutches on the left going out, empty hutches on the right coming in. Now we just, as I said, we only show that section because we couldn't have visitors coming in, walking in through the hutches. Every morning, every evening, we had a walk through, but we can't have our visitors. We bring them as far as here. A guy clips them on then. Just bring them back to where I got them
now. One's going back and one's going forward.
Yeah, as the full ones were emptied outside, the empties were sent back in. Like this, as I say, we have only four hutches there. In there, the hockey here was 2.5 miles of a straight road. So there was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hutches in and out. And you're walking between them all of the time. In the morning, that's actually the speed that the rope went. In the morning time, you were in good fettling, so you'd walk in quicker than the rope. In the evening time, you might be a little bit tired, you'd sit on the side of the hutch and you get a free taxi out. It wasn't recommended, and I'll tell you why. Because some of the places in Derlinbogie here was 12 foot high where there was rockfall. There was other places wasn't 4 foot. So, if you were sitting on the side of the hutch, you needed to know when to jump off, walk through the low place, get back on again. Now, if you were a young fella just starting off, he wouldn't know that. And he gets seriously injured, so it wasn't recommended to wait. The pillars, as you put them up, you hit the rock like that. If you found the rock hollow, or boast. You knew you wanted, needed a pillar, so that's the way you judged that. Now this coal cutting machine goes round and round like a big chainsaw, cutting into the coal. It cuts 1 yard into the coal. One thing, maybe they're right, management and ourselves, we do disagree on this. They're killing us about this yard business. They want us to metres and centimetres and things like that, especially for the little ones. Maybe they're right. But there's one thing about the miner. Some people might say we're headstrong. Other people might say we're a little bit thick. We won't give in on that. Now, I'll tell you why. It isn't a big thing. But if we start losing a little thing today, another thing tomorrow, if we're, I hope we're all about in 10 years' time, the two will be gone altogether. We wouldn't know what we're at. So we stand our ground on that. Now that cuts, as I say, 1 yard into the coal, bottom coal. So when the bottom coal is undermined, the top coal falls down. That's, as I say, is a coal cutting machine. The proper name for it, it's an Anderson 1812. It was manufactured in Scotland. But the most common name, all miners here in Ireland call it the Iron Man. The Iron Man is 3.5 ton weight. I'll give you an idea now how it moved. It took 3 people to operate this machine. There was a guy at the back there putting up pillars. There was a guy in the centre here, we call him the driver. There was a guy here at the end, the haulage man. Now, that steel rope, as you see, would be led up to God maybe 40 years. At the end of that, there was a loop on it like so. That loop was put into the haulage rail. That haulage rail is wedged from top rock to bottom rock. When the haulage man is ready, he signals the driver to start. So when the driver starts, the steel rope recoils itself back into the machine, so the machine then drives itself towards the rail. In a Arigna here, if you see that machine, some of our seams of coal wasn't even that depth. So, in a case like that, you would come before it, knock this, bust this rock down. That machine didn't cut the whole way through the coal. There was no work for us for the next day. That's work by electricity, and that's what you can see the cable there. You know at home, with domestic appliance, with toasters or kettles, you see the cable tore and cut. That armoured cable, but still and all, with rock fall and with explosives, that was always in tatters. There was very few miners in their career that didn't get a shock out of that at some stage. And there was a lot more that it kind of woke us up. Funny about the miners. Now, I, to be honest, maybe I was then, but I'm not now. I'm not ashamed to say. In our time, we were looked down on. We were coming home with scruffy clothes on and dirty faces. We were scruffy looking things altogether. But it's lovely to see that the tide has turned. And it's lovely to see people in here on our tours. Now, I don't just talk that. I seen one Friday here, we had 120 kids in the tunnel at one time. They were great. They were brilliant kids. And I was just saying, and I'd say it always, I'd say if the people before us, they must be proud to see that those kids in, see, and including yourselves as well. So as the man says, it's grand to see that the tide has turned. Now people ask us how many people were killed in the mines. Not many actually, but like they're coming in over the 100 years, 4 or 5 maybe more. But there's always a but. The first guy is drilling the rock here for explosives. We're using dry drills. The rock here in the region is the worst in Europe. The dust lay on their lungs, it caused silicosis. Now that just didn't kill them there and then, but in a short length of time, these guys do a gasping for breath. So it was silicosis and it killed a lot of men. Now, but to be fair and to be balanced about it, the men didn't set out to choke themselves, but the companies didn't set out to choke the men. It was just a kind of a learning process. Now, this machine here might look a terrible looking thing, but it alleviates that problem to a certain extent. That gas cylinder is full of water. Compressed air pushes the water out of the cylinder, in through the drill, in through the bin, out the other side. So, the dust mixed with the water. And it kind of got rid of that, the dust problem to a certain extent. Now, that machine, as I say, might look an awful monstrosity with him, but that machine saved lives. If it was only one life, it'd be a lot, but that saved hundreds of lives. Now, as we come in here now, watch your head, it gets a little bit lower. And watch your good clothes. That's where you crawl out in the evening time. Watch your good clothes now. That's the God, that's the area you call out. Now Ryan, you stay, come in here with me, yeah? Mm-hmm. All these people at the back now just want to take a peek there. Now lads, I have a job to do in a minute, Ryan, anyway. Right? If it took me 8 hours, 2 hours or 5 hours to do that, once I have it done, I can go home. So I go out, when I finish all shoveling, I go out to the foreman, he's called the fires man. He checked both sides, and if he's happy, all is clean, I can go home. Ryan, I put you in charge. You have to look up there now, are you happy? What's a good close? Are you happy? All gone? Yeah?
Yeah.
Everything gone, can I go home? I wait till the
show.
I wait till the end of the tour.
Have another look.
Okay. You're a hard boss. Now, when I the next set of fellas come in, the brochures. Now, I showed you the mess up the other road. This is how it was created. You drill the hole, obviously. You put in one stick of gelignite. You push it in. The second stick, you had a strum like that. You put a detonator on the end of it. You push it into the hole. You always use timber. The reason being, if you use the metal rod, you'd hit the detonator, you'd spark it, you put off the shot. Now, just a side point on that. Since I finished here in 1990, at various jobs, different jobs, but every job we went to, you had a course on this, you had a course on that, you had to do everything. Now, as I said, the miners could be a little bit headstrong, but I remember one in particular, which was for a building company in Dublin, and it was a manual handling course. Now, no disrespect to the lady was doing it, but she produced a wheelbarrow. Now, says I, if I'm not fit to use that wheelbarrow, I shouldn't be at large. So eventually she gave me she wasn't happy with me, but she gave me the certificate anyway. But my point, then, up until 1990, we were using explosives here. They were handing us explosives and say, work away, lads. But, I tell a lie, we had the best trainers in the world. Yet all experienced men. I don't think you could ever get better. We call this branch number 5. There's 4 to me left, there's 20 to me right. We all lit these together. We shouted down to each other. We lit that. We had, I think, about 3 minutes to go to a safe distance. When that's lit, believe me, you will go a long journey in a short length of time. Right, when you're at a safe distance, you have 2 jobs to do. Your first job was to safeguard your branch that no young fella would walk in. Now, actually, there was one fella now. He forgot his coat or something. And he walked in on the shot. That man is still alive and well, thank God. He's living there in Drumshambo now. But that was one. But lucky enough, we hadn't too many of those. Now, second job you had to do was listen that your shot went off. Your shot didn't go off. There could be 2 reasons. One reason was the strum could be damp or could be cut in the middle. But you still had to go back in and put in new strum and new detonator. Is there anybody here now who do that now?
How would you differentiate yours compared to the opposite?
Well, you were there. You just as you know, you'd be waiting there. Oh. Well, would any guys do that now? Mm-hmm. No. Because I've seen, you know, but having said that, there had to have been some higher power saving us. Because nobody in the right mind would do it. Right, all our shots off then, what we do is we have our lunch, which used to be called peacetime. And actually, the reason for that was, it was after all the explosions. That's actually why it was called peacetime. Right, you went out, you sat in a piece of timber. You had a bottle of cold tea and a few sandwiches. You had no place to wash your hands. Sorry, I'm wrong again. You had, if you wanted to walk 2.5 miles out, and 2.5 miles back, 5 miles. So nobody did that. As I say, a bottle of tea and a few sandwiches. Now, we were getting the sandwiches, the mothers or whatever, making it at home. So when you get anything for nothing handy, we've no value on it. We have now. So we threw the crusts away. We're told hundreds of times not to throw the crusts in the lye. So the lye, the area we were eating in, was full of rats. Yeah? There was a lady who took it terribly bad one day when I mentioned the rats, and I told her not to fear that they're all gone now. They're sicknish and tough tour guides. But the only thing about them, they were our friends in a way. Now, as this man asked me earlier on, some of the times we hold out into old workings that was worked hundreds of years. So it was stagnant air, black damp. Now, the first guys with the candles and the carbide lamp, the lamps would have went out. We got no warning with these. So, if we seen the rats too far out the road, we knew there was danger ahead. So they were our friends in a way. Now, the first fellas, that's the handpick. That's what I showed you in the sketch. That's what the first fellas did. Leo, one of our older guides there, can recall his father using this. They chipped away at the coal like so. In the evening time, they take this part off, bring it home, redden it in the fire, and point it for the next shift. Weren't the great men. Like, I have just 10 years experience here, and I can barely comprehend what these guys had to go through. As I say again, I'd say it 100 times, they were great men. I couldn't just envisage myself now.
But their own tools.
Everything we had to buy.
Yeah.
We had even buy the carbide. Well, I didn't use carbide, I mean the father. He had to buy the carbide. He had to buy the shovels. They gave us helmets in the end. Now, Ryan, I have a job for you. Now we had darkness in the mine, which there was dust. There was dust everywhere. Even the fans working good, but still a lot of dust everywhere. What I'm going to do, what Ryan is going to do now, is going to turn off all the lights on you guys. Right? He's going to put off the shot. And if it doesn't come back on, blame you. Mm-hmm. Right, Ryan? Wait with you. Push down on this here. Right? And that's it. Right.
Oops.
You don't see the lights come back on. Come on yourself, now you're in the lamp. Now guys, one thing about these lamps, you put them on the chairs in the evening time. Sometimes we mightn't have them on properly, maybe your own fault, so they give up on you. So if you're in the big long branch, you're in trouble when it goes out. The only way you can get outside is you follow the railway track out. That's the way you get out to the line. Now actually, it is very, very dark, because I see now, I'm walking this place every day of the week. I remember we always come in, do a safety check, always in the morning time, check that everything is okay. And very seldom we even bring the lamps with us. And one day, I came in and one of my companions outside turned off all the lights. Mm-hmm. And I had to follow it to get back out. Mm-hmm. So it was really difficult. There was one fella, I have to tell this story, because I thought it was quite funny at the time. Number one, his lamp went out. And the second thing, as I said, the cable of the Iron Man used to always walk, come in along the edge of the road. Yeah, so misfortune number one, his lamp went out. So he did normal procedure, he was walking out. Then he missed the rail and he hit the cable just where it was. That is funny, actually. He hit it just where it was stripped. And it turned him everywhere. He lost all coordination. He didn't want to go again, he hit it again. So he shouted and shouted for a while, and eventually we let him out. Now I'm just putting off this shot again, and I'll just show you how it would look like. Now, folks, as you were driving up, you see the waterfall on your left hand side. Now, folks, I just finished my tour here. Now, what I have shown you in there, guys, that's a 5-star mine. That's like a hotel. We can't have it any worse or better just for insurance purposes. Now, you wouldn't disagree with me, it's the most harsh, hostile, it's the most savage environment any fellas ever worked in. But it didn't turn any of us into monsters. They're in the mines, they're the soundest fellas, nicest fellas you ever worked alongside. And as I say, I'm proud that I did work with them. Now, and like I do always say, if there was more guys like that, I think there'd be a better set on things, and I think we would have a better world. Now, outside is a DVD, and it shows me shoveling coal, it shows fellas pushing hutches. It shows all of the things. In the area itself, you have pictures on the wall showing miners. You have things on showing our tools. But I think, and it's only my opinion, there's one little thing maybe we should dwell more on, is the real heroes. The real heroes was the mothers and the wives. They were the heroes. They had to come home, or the miners came home into a house with dirty clothes. They had to tidy a house that had washed clothes. There was no such thing as washing machines or not. And I remember, and I'm not that ancient, I remember the mother using a washboard. Does any of you guys know what that was? A washboard. I've seen that been used in our house. So, you know, I think we should talk more about them people. We always have to mention Santa. We have Santa here at Christmas. He's a big hit hot killer. This year, we were a little bit disappointed with the snow and with everything. The kids couldn't come up. But we're looking forward to maybe a good year this year. Now, folks, out of reception, we have a visitor's book. I like your comments, be them good or be them bad. My name is Mike, and thanks very much for listening to our story.
Just 16 years old.
I don't use, I used them to stop here on my way out until a young fella about the size of Ryan caught me out one day. He came over, we'd done the tour, next thing, lighted this lamp. He came up and squared himself up to the lamp here, turned on the light. And he says, "Come here, Michael." He says, "Those branches there." He says, "How come they're not going as far as the Douglas slope?" I hadn't a clue. I just hadn't a clue. So all I could tell him was that, and about 25 people looking at me, all I could tell him was that your man doing the diagram ran out of black mare.
Michael, wonderful tour, and thanks a million. Now, in its heyday, there were about, there were about 400 miners working here.
That's correct, yeah.
That would have been after the, during the war.
During the war, there'd have been that. And, like, it was the only real employer around here, you know. And it would have been that, at least there would be that, you know. And because there were so many mines, because we tried to get a handle on actually how many mines were.
Right.
And like we've even, as the older men, we've come up with new ones. Like there was little places here and there. There was Lynch's, Durnavogie, Rock Hill, Rover, Flynn's, Carnault. There were so many different ones. So there was a lot of, I'd say it's very, very, well I suppose the books themselves would give an idea how many men were.
Yeah, and I know just before it closed that it was what, around 200 were employed?
Give or take, yeah.
So since the mine closed, like 200 jobs in this area was a major source of employment. So since then, what has been the scene?
Well, we thought at the start that it was would have been a disaster when it came. But I think now, my opinion, just any guy that ever walked in there, we were never out of work. You didn't care what you did, and you weren't afraid to do any job or anything at all. So that maybe kind of had us educated for the world.
A survivor.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Now, given the recession at the moment and how hard things are everywhere, so a lot of the people you know from around here are able to cope because of that experience.
I think so, yes. All of the guys now that I've worked with, I've never seen or heard tell of them out of work.
That's brilliant.
Now, to be honest now, that's from, as I said on the tour, since we were that so small, we seen work, we grew up at work, and that was natural to us.
Right.
And we just continued at it, you know.
So, Michael, as I said, thanks a million. And again, the website, if anyone wants to visit, is www.arignaminexperience.ie, and it's at Arigna in County Roscommon. And if you do come up here, ask for Michael. He does a fantastic tour. And tell him you heard about this on the Gaelic Hour on Shane 97.9 FM. Thanks a million, Mike.
I'm an ordinary man, nothing special, nothing grand. I've had to work for everything I own. Oh well, I never asked for a lot. I was happy with what I got. Enough to keep my family and my home. Now they say the times are hard, and they've handed me my cards. They say there's not the work to go around. Oh, when the whistle blows, the gates will finally close. Tonight they're going to shut this factory down. Then they'll tear it down. I never missed a dinner, went on strike for better pay. For 20 years I served them best I could. Now with a handshake and a check, it seems so easy to forget. Loyalty through the bad times and through good. Now the owner says he's sad to see the things have got so bad, but the captains of industry won't let him lose. He still drives a car and smokes a cigar. Still he takes his family on a cruise. He'll never lose. Now it seems to me such a cruel irony is richer now than ever he was before. Now my check is spent and I can't afford the rent. There's one law for the rich, one for the poor. Every day I've tried to salvage some of my pride, to find some work so I might pay my way. But everywhere I go, the answer's always no. There's no work for anyone here today. No work today. And so condemned I stand, just an ordinary man, like thousands beside me in the queue. I watch my darling wife trying to make the best of life, and God knows what the kids are going to do. Now that we are faced with this human waste, a generation cast aside, for as long as I live, I never will forgive. You've stripped me of my dignity and pride. You've stripped me bare. You've stripped me bare. You've stripped me bare.